watch me while I sleep. Don't require your belief. Offering silence but no relief. Can you scream without a sound? Like the freeze that's coming down. Barren space where nothing grows. A secret place where no one goes.
You are listening to Chaos Springs Eternal, a Delta Green actual play. Delta Green, by its nature, deals with violent themes and disturbing imagery, as well as horrors beyond comprehension. Now, if you don't mind those things, I think you'll have a fun time listening. Join us, won't you? Hello and welcome back to Chaos Springs Eternal presents City of Woe. I can't wait for Noah's Woe because Noah's not here today.
I know, I was just about to say that.
I think I said this the last episode too, where I was like, this is going to be a little bit of a different episode. Well, this is also going to be a little bit of a different episode. We're going to do a little one-on-one with the characters now. You know, it's going to be a little bit of downtime and a little bit of other things that I've got planned, but I wanted to actually just go ahead and kind of set the scene here. You, Tyler, your character, Joel, he's sitting in kind of, I would say it's like an uncomfortable, like producer type seat, you know, the scissor leg ones with the cloth, cloth seat and the cloth back. And you're under some incredibly bright lights, right? And you got the full makeup treatment. I mean, you got like what Zach Bagans wishes he had, right? And you are in the studio.
And he is beaming.
Yeah. And you are sitting across from not Cynthia Whitehead, although she is the equipment manager at WCLA. She's running some of the sort of technical background. I actually don't know. I need to, I guess, generate a name or come up with a good name for our WCLA host here.
Do we have a Nina? I like the name Nina a lot.
You like Nina? Okay.
Yeah.
Nina Hernandez?
That's a good one. Yeah. I'm into that.
Nina Hernandez. Because Nina sounds like a good sort of nickname. I don't know what for, but
I mean, I have a friend named Nina. That is her full name, is Nina.
Oh. Cool. Nina is a good name because it's one of those names that could be like a grandma name, but it also could be like a, you know, more contemporary name.
There was a lull for like 30 years where no one used it, and then it popped back off.
Yeah. I would assume it is a nickname for something, but I can't imagine what. Like, it seems like it would kind of be a nickname for like Christina or something. But
that probably is.
I'm sure we're just thrilling the listeners with speculating as to what a day might be a nickname for. But, across from you, also under the bright lights, also, you know, with the heavy TV makeup, is Nina Hernandez. And she is looking around. She's getting some of the last notes from, you know, her director. Cynthia comes by just to check on your mic and her mic, gives the thumbs up, crosses all the T's, dots all the I's. And Nina looks at you. Let me just write this down so I don't forget her name. That's one thing that I do is I forget things like immediately.
Same.
All right. So she turns to you and she just says, hey, okay, Joel. So we're aiming for, I mean, we're going to record for a long time, obviously. So feel free to say as much as you want. We're going to handle all the, you know, edits and tightening up and post. And we're going to have also interviews with Marcy, and with Cyril. And so don't worry, you know, we're going to cut everything together and we'll make it look good. I mean, you guys know, yeah, you've done some editing, you know, you know how to make things look good. You always got to take more than you think you need. Right. Cause it distills down to just the really good stuff. So
yeah, of course, if you did it in one, you do it in three.
Exactly. Do you have any questions concerning anything that you don't want us to touch on? you know, just like red button type things?
No, I'm kind of an open book. I'm more than willing to share my end of the story for sure.
Okay, awesome.
Then he kind of pops, like, you know, he you know, straightens up a little more, and he's like, jacket good, looks good, everything, you know.
Yeah, wardrobe, makeup, you know, I mean, we're not the biggest DV company, but we handle our business, you know, and of course, you know, Cynthia is a miracle worker here.
Oh, of course.
And Cynthia, you know, looks at you, gives a heads up. She's like, she's, you know, equipment manager, but she's got like a headset on and like a clipboard, and, you know, she is darting between everything. She kind of makes a lot of things happen here.
I used to do that. That shit was stressful.
Yeah. So Nina looks at you. She gives you the thumbs up, and she says, okay, we're going to actually open with the clip. And so we're going to go ahead and play the clip so that we can kind of get a little reaction from you, but you'll get the live in your monitor when the camera switches on us. All right. And so she looks over at like the screen, you know, and she's got a teleprompter, and the screen starts playing the clip that you showed to Clementine of I believe it was Marguerite, and the one that she then shared to her contact in New Orleans, or who then from there it's just gone absolutely viral. And this is Wednesday night, so this is 24 hours later, basically.
Gotcha. So that is also, for my recollection, that's the one where Marcy fell down and we caught it like basically looking up through the hole, correct?
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, because it's all of us looking down and then Marguerite looking down with us.
Yes.
I think it was Cyril and Joel like, Marcy, y'all right down there? And there's just like a little girl head popping over too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's it goes through this clip and you see yourself sort of like lean over, yell, and then, you know, sort of among the heads that are looking down this hole, you see Marguerite. And maybe you had another clip in there too, where it was her walking across the room, or sort of like some of the like vague apparitions too, the ones that you didn't, that Cyril couldn't quite get in frame as well. So some of these are sort of cut together, you know, to make
questioning
this video
of her, the books.
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. But everything that you guys had from that sort of first initial night, you know, obviously the footage that was lost is not there, but everything that you had from that first initial, and then I think anything that you had from afterwards, I know that y'all had videoed some stuff when you were actually doing your exorcism, so maybe you've added some clips to that as well in terms of what you've shared. But it's a good, you know, 90-second, 2-minute clip that is some of the greatest ghost footage that's ever been recorded. Now, I've watched a lot of ghost footage. I don't know about you, but there's only like maybe 3 or 4 clips that have stuck out to me as like, oh, that's something to take a second look at. And those clips are maybe 15 seconds long. You know, they're 15 seconds of usually like a half hour or however long. But so for you to have, you know, basically 2 minutes of continuous footage that is head and shoulders above all this, I want to know what Joel's think. I mean, we've looked a little bit at Joel's sort of his pride and stuff, but I want to know specifically, as he's reflecting on this footage, what is Joel thinking about with this footage?
So in the back of Joel's head, it is a lot of, it feels weird to him that something that looks relatively innocent, you know, it's a little girl, like in all forms, it is a little girl, was able to cause such a hell week for him and Clementine and Cyril and Marcy. And just how this has now turned into us having to keep this weird protective dome over the entire town, the entire, you know, greater Carrefour area. That I think there's a bit of him that is stunned, and like he thinks about it for a split second, but then the rush of we caught this, this is real, and everyone knows about it kicks in. And just kind of that elation that everyone ends up is ended up okay. No one has been permanently hurt, and that this is finally his like true proper break, his big break, if you will.
Yeah. So as you're thinking about your big break, you hear, well, you see the teleprompter start to move and you hear the voice of Nina Hernandez. And she says, now this footage was captured by Care4's own Joel LaFont. Joel, by day works at an auto mechanic shop in Care4, but at night he helps lead and work with the Phantom Finders, a Care4 based paranormal hunting show that's featured on our own WCLA on Saturday mornings. Joel, thank you so much for joining me here today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Nina. Thank you for bringing us all out and, you know, really getting our side of the events. It was a good time to be alive, I guess, you know, to be paranormally interested.
Well, I'll say, I mean, I can't imagine. You said that, you know, in our research, you said that this footage was filmed on, you know, Saturday night. And so, I mean, this is just a few days ago. How are you holding up? Do you have any after effects of meeting with this ghost?
And he sits there and thinks for a second. No, I mean, nothing negative immediately kind of sticks out to me. I don't get this wrong. It was a rush and it was terrifying in the moment in every definition of the word. And he kind of, crosses his leg, puts his hands on his knees, hits the real actor in a Monday morning talk show pose. I'm still a little in shock that we were able to get such clear footage of it. As someone who's honestly for most, if not my entire life, believed in stuff like this, just being able to be the one to prove it, it's mind-numbing.
I can only imagine the emotions that are going through you right now, because not only do we have this footage, this amazing ghost footage, but also, you know, you were the one who had this experience. And obviously, you know, our thoughts go out to Marcy. We hope that her recovery is going well. Could you describe a little bit of what happened to her relative to the ghost?
Yeah. It all started in the library. You can actually see the clip of it about halfway through, right before Marcy unfortunately falls. But we were doing a classic questioning session that we do, you know, one knock for yes, two knocks for no, you know, or something along those lines. We found the spirit to be very receptive to that and really liked shaking the bookcase. And, you know, we were asking her, oh, are you alone? What's your name? You know, getting everything we can out of it before she threw a book at Marcy. And I love Marcy. She's one of the best people on this planet. One of my best friends. When we are in a house or any location, really, the protection of her and Cyril are my number one concern. And I really wanted to make sure that the spirit was clear and that I wasn't going to have any of that. And you can hear me, of course, say some uncouth things, but it kind of startled us all. And I think I was less afraid and more just angry. I don't know if Cyril's ever really explained to me exactly how he felt, but I feel Marcy was the most shaken up, rightfully so. I mean, she was getting things thrown at her before the accident, so.
Wow. So you mentioned all of these things. Were there any other manifestations of this spirit in the house? Any other things that, you know, maybe another ghost hunting group or you might want to look out for if they happen to get permission to attend?
Permission to attend, huh?
Yeah, well, maybe we should cover that because, you know, this was at a private residence. Now, a lot of your shows have looked at sort of more public facing, you know, monuments or houses or even just hotels. You know, there was the ranch in Florida that y'all went to. But this seems to be quite different than a lot of your standard ghost hunting shows. Could you explain how you were first brought into to Florizon Manor?
Yes, of course. Florizon Manor is owned by the mayor's family. I believe it was actually his late aunt that was most recently the owner before it got passed down to him and his brother, I believe. But he asked us to come in and do a little investigation, you know, make sure that we have a good place in town that we can point to, you know, a place that the Phantom Finders and Care 4 can finally properly connect together, as opposed to, you know, a ranch out in Florida, a hotel room in New Orleans. It really let us sink our teeth into home turf, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of home turf, I mean, you are, well, you well, not born in Care 4, you are kind of a Care 4, you know, citizen, and your family has its own history here. I wanted to take the opportunity to get to know a little bit more about you. How did you wind up back in Care 4? Because you haven't lived here your whole life, is that right?
No, a good portion of it. I was not born in Care 4. I was born just south of New Orleans myself. I attended most of my classes, both in middle school, high school, in southern New Orleans community school systems. But both my parents were born in Care 4, and my grandparents on my mom's side was in Care 4 for my entire life until they passed. But most of my childhood growing up was on these streets. I mean, we would come and visit my grandparents, and I would go out, and me and my sister Clementine, we would go terrorize the neighborhoods and meet other children my age and just make friends. And I really came to love the town, and it's kind of a little bit of a safe place for me, you know, like a no place like home. Everyone immediately thinks of an actual house. I think of the town.
Yeah. Now your family does have some history here, including some history that, you know, I went and checked our archives. Apparently y'all have never experienced, but is there a reason that the Phantom Finders have never gone out to the Vail Springs Sanatorium? I think your family owned and operated that back in the 40s and 50s.
Yes, that is true. Good investigation. Not a lot of people even remember the sanitarium's existence anymore. The real reason we haven't done it is it feels like a little bit of a nepotism baby, you know? When you have a place like that in the family, especially, you know, Clementine and I are two of the founding members of the Phantom Finders alongside Cyril and Marcy. And it never sat right for me and Clem, I don't think, to use our family history like that, especially so early on. It feels a little self-aggrandizing or idolization of your family when it's not really necessary, especially since it's been covered by other ghost adventurers too in the area. And you know, just we wanted to be first in other places before we start treading where others have already, you know?
She looks at you and smiles, and she says, well, yeah, of course. You know, sanitarium is a place where, you know, people who really needed help could go to get the help they need, whether it was people with actual, you know, mental disorders or other sort of physical disorders. She looks at you and she says,
crippling substance addiction.
And again, there's this moment where her eyes seem to turn black, and her voice drops in this register. And I think a little bit of panic grips you. In fact, so much that I need you to go ahead and make a roll. Make a sanity check here.
All right. Little peek behind the screen here. My sanity and my breaking point aren't too far apart.
That's good to know.
So there's a chance something bad might happen here in the in this interview. Oh, I got a 76 over 58.
Okay, so that is a fail. Let's you know, let's go ahead and make it fun. Roll me a 1d6. Five or more will send you into an episode.
Five or more? You don't want to know. You don't want to know.
How much is it?
I got a 5. I got a 5.
You got a 5. Okay. So when this happens, you white knuckle the arms of this chair, and I need you to choose fight, flight, or freeze. Like, rank them from top to bottom, most likely to least likely.
Oh, most likely to least likely. Okay, freeze is going to be number one.
Okay, most likely?
Yes.
Okay.
Flight is going to be the second, and fight is going to be his third.
Okay, so the way that we're going to do this is you're going to roll a d6. 1, 2, 3 will be freeze. 4, 5 will be flight. And 6 will be fight.
Okay.
I'm really interested to see any way that this goes. Let's go ahead and roll.
4.
So flight. All right. Yep. So tell me, as she's saying this, and she is getting a little bit antagonistic, I would say. Like, you could definitely tell, you know, without, I don't know what your humint is, but you don't have to have a high humint to tell that she's beginning to, you know, poke a little bit and purposefully try to kind of rile things up here.
Okay.
So what is your reaction with this flight? Tell me what Joel does.
I think no matter what was happening, even if I didn't fail that and go over my breaking point there, I definitely think Joel would have like paused for a second. I think he kind of goes through his nervous tick. He kind of chews his tongue for a second. And then when her voice drops real low, he shoots up out of the chair and he kind of walks around the back and like towards the door and just shouts back at her. Just like, we're not doing this here. Please.
Cynthia chases after you. She's like, oh, I need to grab the equipment. And you see that Nina is talking into her headset and you know, just a little bit. And Cynthia follows you out and she's like, Joel, please wait. Let me at least grab your mic and stuff. I'm so sorry. I had no idea that she was going to go into your family stuff. I would have never stood for that.
He gets out the door and puts one hand on a wall and just breathes for a second and just like keeps her at a distance for a second. Just like, no, don't give me just a few seconds, please. And he turns to her. Did that seem weird?
Well, do you mean you getting up and leaving the interview or her
delivery of it? Her delivery of it. Did that seem off?
Oh, you know, newscasters. I mean, they've got the TV voice. I can never, I mean, that's why I'm behind them, behind the, you know, camera. I can't do that voice. I can't put on that persona. I don't know how she does it.
He kind of looks at her, sees that she clearly did not witness what he did. Let me go back in. I'm going to go back in.
She gets you rigged up and that sort of stuff and says, okay, all right, I can do that. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, that was rude. And he apologizes to Cynthia and he sits down, looks at Nina. Okay, turns out there is something I don't want recorded on here, and it's that.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, this was came up in the reviews we had, and it's just, you know, it's part of Care 4 that never really gets looked at, and I just thought it might be a good opportunity to speak to someone who might know a little bit of the history. So my apologies, let's move on. All right, and she looks at the director and is like, "Are we good to keep going?"
I'm sorry. What did you ask me?
I was just asking about your feeling of this being, you know, the sanatorium being in your family. Do you ever experience any conflict? You know, do you feel like your show is ever exploitative, you know, of some of these places? And then, of course, you don't look at your own family. I understand. That's sensitive stuff. I'm a journalist. I got to push some buttons.
No, that's fine. I misunderstood the question. And he white knuckle grips the chair and just breathes. I'm sorry. I interpreted that question wrong. He looks around the room for a little bit, or just for a second. You can do that one. Let's roll it back. I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't know what happened there.
She says, no. Let's just keep going. We can cut that whole thing because I do have more questions just about you. And she just hops right back into that newscaster persona, the TV interview type of thing, you know, unfazed by everything that just happened. And she says, so Joel, tell me, where did your first interest in the paranormal peak up? Did you have an experience when you were young or I guess at any time in your life that really kicked off this paranormal interest?
He tries to settle back in the chair as best he can. He's noticeably more tense now. I don't think there's any way that he can get back to the much more lax, like carefree style that he was in.
This is, I will say, like mechanically, you know, these sorts of, when you take five or more sanity in a single hit, you're supposed to have this sort of short-term issue, right? And so I love the idea of you just going out for air and coming back. Because Joel, I think he can do that, right? Like that seems to make sense to me, especially given his motivations, right?
This is like the biggest thing for him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I love this thing, but that he's also coming back and it's a totally different tenor, right? I'm curious now. So what was your sanity before it was 54?
I was originally at 50. Where did I put it? I am sorry. No, it was originally at 58 and I was at a breaking point at 56. So I'm at 53
now. So you passed your breaking point. So the breaking point will also give you a new sort of disorder, which we'll discuss in the future. I've got to think a little bit more on that, but I think there's some like obvious themes that could go under. So you've had a short-term disorder and a long-term disorder. What is your new breaking point, which should be your current sanity minus your PAL?
It's current sanity, not previous breaking point. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
It is. Let's see. That is 39.
Okay. All right. And this was unnatural. So any of your adaptations that you had, you can wipe those out as well.
Okay.
Just
I had one violence.
I realize at this point that I made a point to talk about this in the last episode that you could project some of the sanity, but I'm going to say no, you can't do that now. But I need to keep that in mind, and maybe when I do the one on one with Mark and Noah, I will remember it for them. But I think this is super appropriate. For
I agree.
Joel.
Especially that, and this is a little peek into Joel as well, the substance abuse, I know I kind of mentioned it in a previous episode, no one except for him and Kian know about that. I don't even think Kian fully understands how bad, like not bad, but how hard of substances he does every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. So going back to, your paranormal, like your first paranormal experience or what got you into this to begin with. Let's go there.
Okay. He again, very tense. My grandparents, they swore up down that their house was haunted. I think it was mostly just a bit of a joke that they pulled on me and Clementine saying that, oh, there's the spirit of this little boy that lives inside the house with us. And, you know, he keeps us company while you two aren't around. And just that fascinated me that there was another kid, another person my age, kind of. Obviously, if it was true, and I believed it to be true when I was, you know, 5, 6, when they first told me that I had another friend in that house that I could go see whenever I wanted or whenever I was there, of course. And I, you know, we heard creaks and groans of the house and passing that one room up in the upstairs, right down the hall. It was a spare room. It's where Clementine slept every night. We were there. I swear I could see something and I go back and there's just the coat rack hanging there and there's either mine or Clem's jacket hanging up. But that was my first real experience. I didn't have anything too crazy that made me want to go deep into it. Just that fascination and that desire to meet someone new really got me into it.
Well, you know, you have had a history with the Phantom Finders. There've been some very fun episodes, but I can't imagine that you've had any meeting of someone like you did with this ghost. What more can you tell us about the ghosts themselves? Do you know who this was? Do you know anything about them that you can share with us? I mean, people are dying to know. There's tons of theories, online, all the sort of conspiracy theories. I mean, obviously, there's a big contingent who still say that this is all CGI and faked and all that sort of stuff. But for the believers, you know, there's a few different theories. But I'm curious, what can you tell us from your research, from your experience?
I can tell you wholeheartedly, it was real. Obviously, Marcy's accident was a lot more serious than what we experienced. But at the time, we were deep into it. And we definitely got to know this little girl's name. And we got to learn a little bit about her. But I'm not going to spoil that here. You guys have to tune in to the actual Phantom Finders episode.
Oh, well, I was hoping to get a little exclusive scoop there.
No, you know what? I'll give you it. It starts with an M. I'll hit you with that. You want the rest? You have to come in.
All right. Well, thank you for that teaser. Is there anything else you want to share with the world?
Yes, I want to share that this means a lot to me and my friends here at the Phantom Finders. It's not every day that you get to break new grounds on events like this and be treated like a rock star more than you already are. But I just want to also shout out my good friends. I used to be part of a band, hoping to still eventually sneak my way back in there sometime, for like a little guest spot. But the Paradise Rebels, they're an excellent band. And I just want to express my love to them, that they were able to get me kind of more out of my shell and wanting to get out more into the media side of the world.
All right. Well, all right. I think that wraps everything up. She looks at her producer. She's like, anything else that we should cover? He just gives her the thumbs up and says, all right, well, thank you for joining us. You can, we can get you unhooked from everything. You can go wash off your makeup and, head on out. Thanks for responding on such short notice too, for us to get this exclusive. I mean, it's this is awesome, you know.
Yeah, not a problem at all. I appreciate you asking us to come out actually and taking it all seriously. I'm actually a little surprised how receptive everyone's been and how little hate we've gotten.
Yeah, and she leads you back out, and as you are headed out, you see Cyril sitting in a chair getting makeup done, and Marcy sitting in the chair getting makeup done. But you walk past them, pushing out the door, and are headed back to Care 4 on this Wednesday afternoon into evening. I want to give you the opportunity now to do a little downtime. This is also, we can go ahead and progress any skills. It feels like we just did that, but this is kind of how... Mm-hmm. You know, these campaigns are going to go. So let's go ahead and do that. And then anything that you want to cover in terms of like people you want to talk to, or, you know, if you do want to take one of those downtime activities, let me know, you know, which one specifically, and we can take a look at that.
Okay. So first off, I only actually have one skill to progress with. I only failed the Hument, it looks like.
That sounds about right.
Or if I failed the others, I didn't mark it, and so it is my own damn fault. So it is 1d4, correct?
I can't remember, but I think we figured out that roll 20 does it automatically.
There it is. Update. Boom. Ooh, baby. Plus 3 to my Hument. Let's go.
Nice. Nice. What does that put your Hument at now?
53. Or sorry, 52.
52. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I think Joel is starting to pick up on other people. They do. So
so as for the rest of his downtime, I think first off, immediately leaving, he sits out in his car and just breathes, like he just gets as much fresh air as possible. Obviously, I know we said we wanted to talk about it before, but I think there is something deeply troubling about both her and the priest's whatever that deeply has disturbed him. And he's sick to his stomach, and he's
sitting in his front seat, windows down. He's just hands, car's not even on, hands on the wheel, just 10 and 2. And he's eyes closed, looking up, just breathing, trying to keep himself from throwing up for a good 5-10 minutes before turning it on. Oh, sorry, turning on the car and texting his old bandmates, like all of them, not just Ivy, but all of his friends from the group, and just being like, hey, just wanted to say I shouted you guys out on the interview that I just did with the news company, or sorry, with the news studio. They're doing a special on us after the ghost clips. And I'm just giving you a heads up, so you might get a little kickback from that. You know, you might get your search. You might get searched up more, basically, like just keeping an eye out for you guys, and love y'all. Hope to get together again sometime.
Yeah, you get a few, you know, thumbs up reactions. And when someone's like, hey, that's great, man. Thanks. We'll keep an eye for the download charts and see the bump. Ivy, she does text back and she says, oh, that's great. Thanks.
And he's surprised for the second time today.
Yeah, I almost want to make you roll sanity on that, but I can't justify that.
Yeah, just I picture he's like, oh, cool, everyone liked that. And he puts his phone away and he turns on the car and he starts driving out of the parking lot. And then he like slams on the brake and pulls up his phone again. He's like, holy shit.
That's like the longest text message she sent in, I don't know, what do you think, 6 months?
Probably ballpark. It's been probably a year, almost a year to 8 months that he has gone Phantom Finders full time. So yeah, probably 6 months if I had to guess. And he is just giddy again. he's like, I'm in, I'm fucking in. I told him all this was going to happen again. And look, here it is. She texts me back this whole, what, 5 whole words. Let's fucking go. And he cranks up his stereo. He goes home, takes a little, post-work nap. Can you please remind me what the other, downtime activities are? I know there's like, Indulge a Vice and.
Yeah. Let me go through these again. These are fulfill responsibilities, which can mm-hmm. bump up your sand, but also causes damage to a bond. You got back to nature, which is again, bump up a sand and reduce a bond, establish a new bond, which would be an interesting one. Go to therapy. That's obviously mm-hmm. interesting. Improve skills or stats, personal motivation, which is indulging in things you find meaningful. This is kind of what I've based that vice on. Special mm-hmm. training, and then you got stay on the case and study the unnatural.
Gotcha.
Studying the natural, I'm going to say, is one of those ones that like you would have to have a specific thing that you're doing. So if you wanted to like go with Glomas and be like, hey, Glomas, you got any books I can read? You could do that. But, you know, otherwise it's not like you have to have like a way to go get that. You can't just like go to the library and get that.
Yeah. Just read the Necronomicon. Librarian Bill, I'm checking out the Necronomicon. Hope that Relay doesn't show up again. Right. Ha ha. Leaves. No.
He says, Relay is a city, dumbass.
Yeah, exactly. Again, I have a zero unnatural, thank you. Joel would never have known. Anyways, so I think the big thing that he's going to do is... So he's going to... How long about is the downtime, just so I have an idea, that we're going to do?
It's probably going to be a few days. But obviously we're playing a little fast and loose. So you have a job that you got to also do. So it's not of like course. You guys can, unless you go get yourself fired or take Clementine up on the other position, you know, you guys, you don't have a ton of stuff to do during the days. And so I'm going to hold it to basically whoever takes the longest on their downtime, that's going to be the next time that you guys can get together.
So there's basically three things I kind of want to do. Two of them can basically be done in one day.
Okay.
I think so. Obviously, I think one of them is also much more dependent on Clementine as well.
Yeah.
Cause Joel wants to get friendly with, I'm blanking on her name. She runs the weird bookstore.
Luna.
Thank you. He wants to get to know Luna a little bit better. Not in a serial kind of way, but in a, he really does want to be more protective of her, I think, seeing as one, ghosts are real. Two, she's part of this coven and he wants in, one as a way to protect himself and his friends, but also, yeah, basically just, he just wants to be able to protect himself and his friends and know more about it other than just being like, hey, I know how to work cars and stand in front of a camera and act like a goofball. He wants a way to actually be able to do anything against these paranormal and spiritual entities. So he's going to go there and just try and get to know her and properly introduce himself and be like, hey, I asked Clementine if she can get me involved at all. But even still, I feel that we might become better acquaintances even without becoming part of the coven, or not even part of a coven, like the, like just being taught something.
Okay. So it actually kind of does sound like you're going with the study in the unnatural.
Yeah. If he has it in, he, it looks like he is going to go the unnatural, but he's not going to go to Glomis and be like, hey, right, teach me your weird alchemy and shit. It's a more, yeah, witchy vibe as opposed to a more scientific vibe.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Do you want to swing by the Ethereal Essence Emporium on your way home? Is that what?
Yeah, he'll probably not on his way home, but like, I think he might need the day after the interview and the darkening of the eyes and the deep voice.
Okay. All right.
He's going to take the rest of the day and he's just going to chill with Kian. They're going to finish the final season of Breaking Bad together for the fifth time and move on the next day, go to the Ethereal Essence Emporium.
So Thursday sometime you head to the Ethereal Essence Emporium?
Yeah, after work. He would head there before going home. So he's in his work uniform. There's probably oil stains on it because he hasn't washed it yet for the week, and dirt under his fingernails, stuff like that. He strolls in through the front. I assume it's relatively empty.
Well, you know, in a shocking turn of events, it's actually more busy than it was the time that y'all came. In fact, you've noticed, like, just throughout Care 4, it's like you feel like there's a little more traffic. The mall is a little busier. Especially right now, like the mall food court's actually kind of busy. It's one of those things that I think you just barely clock. Like, it's just subtle enough to be noticeable, but not enough to be inconvenient.
Yeah, it's just enough where he's like, huh, usually I can catch this light. And then he's really like, oh, the streets are kind of busy.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, do you want to make like an alertness roll for me?
I mean, I can, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's see, I have a 32 under 44 success.
Okay, so I think what you notice is that it's like, it's a lot of like single individuals. And it's people that you don't know. And as you're sort of in this slight extra traffic, all of the plates are obviously out of town plates, or you think maybe rental cars. So it's just, you know, you notice a handful here and there that's like, huh, this is odd.
All right.
But as you make your way into the Ethereal Essence Emporium, there's a handful of, I mean, it's maybe two or three other people just browsing. Luna is standing next to one of them, talking about one of the books that they're looking at and giving some advice.
Awesome. As he enters, he'll wave to Luna and just point kind of over at the desk, the front desk where they met originally, you know, where the register and stuff are. And he'll just sit over there and wait for her to finish her business with the customer before talking with her. Doesn't want to interrupt her business.
Yeah. She continues talking with the customer for just, you know, maybe a few more seconds, and then kind of points to a couple others, you know, and just sort of invites, it's like, you know, throws her hand and sort of an invitation to the rest of the shop, to this customer. And then she makes her way back to the cash register. And she says, well, hello there, Joel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Luna.
Yeah, well, I will say you're doing pretty good. You are, you know, you guys are the talk of the town, talk of the country, practically.
Yeah, it's you know what? It's a little weird.
Well, you're in the right place in a good way. If you want to talk a little weird.
Yes, I do. Speaking of which, I just want to get out of the way and say I can't
appreciate enough what you did to help me get Clementine out of there without... Well,
of course, I couldn't let her languish, but...
No.
You did most of the work.
Yeah, but we didn't know what we were doing without a little guidance. Speaking of which, I'm nervous that might not be the only time I need that kind of guidance. Or we might not need that kind of guidance.
Okay. All right.
I talked with Clem, and it's a stretch, I know. I'm wary of what's out there now. And I'm afraid for Clem and me and Cyril and Marcy. And I asked her if she could help me talk you guys into not making me an honorary member, but teaching me a couple of things or putting me in the right directions of some of these novels in here that you have. Or maybe not novels, but more textbooks, whatever. Tomes? Is that the term? Is that the nerd term?
Tomes, grimoires. Those are spell books.
Spell books. I guess those are real, huh? And he whispers real as he's like puts his hand to his head. Like, what is he getting himself into?
She smiles and says, well, I mean, there are a lot of spell books out there. I'm not going to say that everyone is real. There's plenty of, let's call them, magic for suckers. You know, sort of vaguely meditative type of that sort of thing, which, you know, obviously brings some people some value, or they wouldn't keep making those books. But no, you're going to need something a little more potent.
Yes.
She says,
that's what I'm asking. And I think Joel has the, like, there's like a gravity around Joel of like someone buying their first firearm for like defense. Like their house just got broken into and they've realized, oh shit, I need something in case it happens again and I'm around for it.
Yeah. And she says, well, I think I can teach you something, and if that works, that'll give you access to a lot of other things. But Joel, it's going to take some mental fortitude. Real mental fortitude. This is really work.
Yeah, I know. I'm willing to give it a shot. Okay. I don't know what Clem's lied to you guys about. No, she's probably telling the truth about me. I don't know what she's told you about me. I'm willing to defend my people and do the work necessary for it.
Well, Joel, if there's one thing when it comes to magic that I know, it's the first step is cleansing the inner vessel. And she looks at you and she has this look of, it's a penetrating gaze, but in a way it's almost the opposite of the darkness that you've seen in the eyes now of Pastor Guidry and of Nina Hernandez. In Luna Blackwood's eyes, you see someone who, it's almost as if they know every detail of you, that there is suddenly nothing that you have that is hidden from her. And that's actually where we're going to end for right now.
I like it.
Thanks for tuning in this week to Chaos Springs Eternal presents Season 1, City of Woe. We're in the little lull between Arc 1 and Arc 2, but we're going to kick some stuff off. I was really glad that we got Joel to go ahead and fail a sanity roll here. Really enjoyed this time with Tyler. Next one, we've got two more of these lined up, so next one's going to be with Mark and Cyril, and then we'll have Noah and... playing Marcy for the third one. So got that to look forward to for the next few weeks. And I thought it would be kind of fun to have each one of them, you know, do their own sort of interview. Thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure you go, you know, rate and review us on iTunes. That helps us out. Go say hi to us when we post on the Delta Green subreddit. Shout out to Arc Dream Publishing for making Delta Green. It's a really fun game. Make sure you check the show notes for all of our links and send us an email if you have any feedback. Thanks for tuning in. And also, Thanks to Pawns Over Kings for Cositis, which is just such a fun song. And I'm going to stop talking over it now so that you guys can listen to a little bit more of it. All right. Have a good one.